Quibus dispensus aveno, noctis atque dies patet atri iano editis. Sed revocari gradum superas quae vaderat os.
Hoc opus in calabo est.
Edith.
Good afternoon, Father. You see, I still remember my Virgil.
I didn't hear you come up there.
Oh, you were far away. Finding the descent to Hades easy, but to find your way back. Quiet, boy!
Trace one step out to the upper air. That's the task.
That is the labor. Well, I'm taking Roy here to the upper air of the high meadow. Give him a run.
Oh. Seems in need of it.
You never do so now. You and he were once so close.
Quieten, Edith. And I have more to occupy me than walking a bad-tempered old wolfhound.
He's not bad-tempered. He's been missing you. How's Alice?
Miss Morphy is very well indeed. I said, hold him, Edith!
I'm doing it first, Father! What's the matter with you?
Take the beast away!
Yes, Father!
Take him away before I summon Bennett to have him taken away for good! Shot! That's the medicine for mad dogs. Or strangled. Or still strangled with my own hands.
Father!
I could do that, you know. I have the strength for it. Don't you doubt I have the strength to rid myself of the feeble old brain, softened, ranting brute?
The Creeping Man by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Dramatized for radio by Robert Forrest. With Clive Medicine as Sherlock Holmes and Michael Williams as Dr. John Watson. And featuring Robin Ellis as Professor Presbury. The Creeping Man.
Holmes. I've been here for half an hour.
Not quite, Watson, not quite.
And you haven't uttered a word.
Oh, what a time. You showed more understanding of, or at least patience with, my protracted reveries.
I do understand.
Well, curious facts have been submitted to me that in turn give rise to speculation of a more general character.
Speculation that you might share with me.
Yes, presently.
Since I am here at your request, your seemingly urgent request, come at once, if convenient, if inconvenient, come all the same.
Neatly worded, don't you think?
Mm.
And I take it by your tone, it was inconvenient.
It was, as a matter of fact.
But here you are.
Yes, here I am, having had to rearrange my entire day. My practice, you know, is not inconsiderable.
And Mrs. Watson's concern for you, it too, is considerable.
Mm. Well, of course it is, but...
In addition to a thriving medical practice and an ever-watchful wife, does a lovable family dog play a part in your new domestic arrangements?
A dog? Oh.
But if I were to study Dr. Watson's dog, what might I learn?
I think Holmes, even you would learn little from a hypothetical dog.
Might I witness it whining at you, tail thumping impatiently, begging to be taken out on adventures?
Hmm?
Yes, only when you and the mutt were alone together, of course.
Holmes, what are you talking about?
I am giving serious thought to the writing of a small monograph on the uses of dogs in the work of the detective.
You mean bloodhounds?
Oh, no, no, no. That's been thoroughly explored already. No, but a dog reflects the family life. Whoever saw a frisky dog in a gloomy household or a sad dog in a happy one? Snarling people have snarling dogs. Dangerous people, dangerous ones. And changing canine moods may reflect changes in the family around them.
Holmes, did you summon me for my work for something so trivial?
In some ways, Watson, you never change.
Hmm?
You never learn that the gravest issues may depend upon the smallest thing. Yes, Professor Presbury.
Presbury?
The Cambridge physiologist.
I know of him, of course.
But not of Roy, his devoted wolfhound, who now, after years of being the traditional, faithful best friend of the man, has twice attacked his master. Huh? What do you make of it?
Isn't it obvious? The dog is ill, distempered.
The beast attacks no one else, and molests the professor only on very special occasions.
Curious.
Very curious. Aha! Young Mr. Bennett. Admirably prompt. And now we may learn more about our professor and his perfidious pet.
The matter, Mr. Holmes, it's very delicate.
We understand, Mr. Bennett.
The relation in which I stand to...
Professor Presbrey.
Yes, both publicly and privately.
You see, Watson, Mr. Bennett here is not only a professional assistant to the great scientist, but lives under his roof and is engaged to his only daughter.
Oh, congratulations, Mr. Bennett.
Thank you. But the thing is, I don't see how I can, well, justify myself if I speak before...
Before?
A third person.
Oh, I see. Have no fear, Mr. Bennett. Dr. Watson here is the very soul of discretion.
Oh, I don't doubt that at all.
I can assure you, Mr. Bennett.
In fact, I was just about to impart all I know of the case to him, so please, please, do continue.
There have been fresh developments.
Excellent. That's what I hoped for. But first I shall proceed to outline, to share with my invaluable friend and colleague the course of events so far.
I suppose I must accept your assurances, Mr. Holmes.
Of course you must do that. Now, the professor is a man of European reputation. His life has been academic, illustrious.
Never a breath of scandal.
Not one.
Certainly not.
Oh, not one breath of scandal, then, in all his 61 years. And now this most respectable widower has become engaged to the daughter of Professor Morphy, his colleague in the chair of comparative anatomy. The lady, Alice Morphy, is an admirable match for the professor in both mind and body. Is that not so?
Yes, she is.
And intellectually most accomplished for a girl of 24 years.
24,
Watson. Then, not long after this happy engagement was announced, a little mystery clouded the professor's normal routine. He left home.
Left home?
With no indication of where he was going. He was away a fortnight, is that correct?
Yes, and returned.
Altered?
In certain ways. His intellect was not affected. His lectures were as brilliant as ever, if not even more.
But there was an alteration, as if he were under some shadow.
Mr. Holmes.
Those are your words, Mr. Bennett. Something sinister, you said. Not the man you'd known and admired for years, you frankly stated. And if I'm to help you, you must continue to be so frank with me and with Dr. Watson.
Very well.
You were aware of the change in the professor as soon as he returned?
From the very hour he returned. He threw himself back into his work with, if anything, more vigor, more brilliance than before. But, yes, he was altered.
Blood tomorrow, Bennett. I shall announce my return with a dissertation, a very rhapsody on the blood of life. Blood must have its course, lad. And every dog its day.
Yes, sir.
Well, you agree with Mr. Kingsley, then?
Mr. Kingsley?
Mr. Charles Kingsley, the Chartist clergyman who railed against celibacy and wrote much about water. An obsession instilled in him I've always maintained by his cold, compulsory baths at school. Put the books down, boy. And find me that portfolio, the vascular diagram.
Right, sir.
We may agree with Kingsley, Bennett, who said also that we must do noble things, not dream them. But we can no longer agree with Harvey in his explication of the blood. Or rather, we now see more deeply, more clearly into the complexity and versatility of that. It's not up there, boy. Certainly not up there.
It's a purple folder, isn't it?
Yes, tied with yellow cord. It must take a morning soon to reorganize this place. We've allowed too much clutter to accumulate. Ah, but it's good to be back. No, surprisingly good. My first lecture tomorrow will be a declaration of intent on my part. My intent to do more than simplify difficult matters for inferior, immature minds. My intent to do new work, bold work.
The air of a company in Prague must be supremely invigorating, sir.
Prague?
Yes, I had a letter from a fellow student there. He mentioned in passing that he...
Give you a full account of my work there, did he, this student fellow?
No. No, he merely saw you across the street.
Well, no matter. Find that portfolio.
Yes, sir.
Oh, such a genius the man was. William Harvey. Here it is. De Mucu Cordis on the motion of the heart and blood in animals, 1628. A new age began then, Bennett. Perhaps a new age... is beginning now. Our knowledge of the constituents and functions of the blood. Leave that alone!
Sir?
Leave it be! You meddling young fool! Bring it here! 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 Give it to me. This box, Bennett, this box you so carelessly handled.
Sir, I've merely lifted it.
It contains only personal material, private material. It is
no concern of yours.
I understand, sir. I was only moving it out of my way.
There are other things that are not your concern.
Well, of course, sir, I wouldn't...
You are not my son. And you are not yet even my son-in-law. You will agree I am entitled to some privacy. Let us not say secret. Some proper privacy from a mere secretary and assistant, however much confidence I have in him.
Of course.
And I do have confidence in you, Bennett. I am confident you will respect my wishes, carry out my instructions. As to certain correspondence I expect from London.
Correspondence?
Letters, Bennett. Letters and packages of a strictly private nature from London, which will be marked beneath the stamp with a cross. You understand?
A cross beneath the stamp?
Just so. Letters and packages so marked are not to be opened by you. If you value your place here and your happy position with my daughter.
And correspondence so marked did arrive?
Yes, there have been several such deliveries.
And you obeyed the professor's command? You've no idea of their contents?
None. They come from London. They were addressed in a rather illiterate handwriting. Beyond that, I know nothing.
Yes, and the box you so angered him by touching?
Mr. Holmes, the new development I mentioned, the incident the night before last.
Yes, I've been wondering about that.
All in good time, Mr. Bennett. All in good order. Huh? That's the proper method. My method. Huh? The box.
I can tell you little about it. Wooden, quaintly carved. I think he must have brought it back from Prague.
Its contents, too, are a mystery to you.
Yes. All I know is he keeps the key to it on his watch chain.
When did the incident you just described take place?
Early in July. In fact, I can tell you the exact date. I have it here. The 2nd. And it was on that date, too, that Roy first attacked the professor. On July the 11th, there was a similar scene, which Edith witnessed. Again on July the 20th. Then we had to banish the dog to the stables.
Admirable.
But he had been such an affectionate animal.
I mean, you're an admirable witness. It seems you do appreciate my method.
I learned method, Mr. Holmes, from my great teacher, Professor Presbury.
Now, Miss Edith Presbury.
Edith?
The professor's daughter, your fiancée. Did she, too, note the disturbing change in her father's character?
Well, yes, she did, of course, but I don't see the relevance of that. She knows even less than I do about the marked letters.
There's more to this than marked letters, Mr. Bennett. And you've agreed, have you not, to be utterly frank with me?
Yes, I have.
Because we have to violate a deeper privacy than the professor's correspondence.
I don't understand.
It is understanding we seek, is it not? Now, tell me what your fiancée has confided in you about her father's altered behavior.
The day he came home from Prague, the first time she saw him on his return.
Come on now, Roy. Good boy. We'll keep each other's spirits up. We'll have a run in the meadow. Let the fresh air... Father! Oh, you're home!
So I am, Edith, so I am. And how wonderful it is to see you.
We were so worried. No word from you.
And to see Roy. Good boy, good old boy.
Where have you been?
Both of you look radiant, as the garden does, as home does, everything does.
Father, please. We've been so anxious.
Where I've been is of no matter. Now I'm home. I have nothing to tell you that you need to know, or that would entertain a young lady. But you... You have much to tell me.
Tell you?
Oh, I've been homesick, Edith, very sick and failing indeed. But now I'm well, healthy and well, and eager to be doing. Don't I look well?
Oh, yes, you do, but...
Oh, that chestnut tree is splendid, isn't it? And the lawn positively shines. Alice, how is Alice?
She's well, but of course she too has been at a loss.
At a loss? My Alice? Not for company, I'll wager. No doubt a host of young fools has been buzzing around her like foraging bees. Oh, that fatuous swarm will now be dispersed. Annihilated. The honey's all mine. Mine. And mine alone.
Pride. That was the word she used. He seemed so proud. Some breakthrough in his work, I assume. New work, he said to me. Bold work.
And yet, according to Edith, he didn't talk about his work.
No. About his Alice.
Gentlemen, I feel I must tell you about the night before last.
Yes, September the 4th. 9.
9 what?
9. A meaningful number, I think.
Holmes, what are you talking about?
Do tell us what happened on this significant date, Mr. Bennett.
It was about 2 in the morning. I was lying awake.
I thought by the look of you, you might have been sleeping badly.
With so much distress, Doctor.
You may consult Dr. Watson about your insomnia later. Please, go on.
I heard a sound in the corridor outside my room. A dull, muffled sound. I got up, opened my door. Mr. Holmes, I believe I'm as strong-nerved as any man, but the corridor was dark. Only one window, halfway along, threw a patch of light, pale light, on the floor. And into it, something was emerging. Something dark, crouching, and it was he. Crawling. No, creeping. Not quite on his hands and knees, more. Good God. More on his hands and feet. His face sunk between his hands. Creeping. But with ease. His eyes darting, and I was paralyzed. What's that?
It's only the bell downstairs.
The bell?
The doorbell. Caller.
Who could it be?
Come, just a minute. Mrs. Hudson will discover who.
I'm sorry, Jack.
It's all right.
I knew I'd find you here, and I simply had to see you. After what happened last night, I just couldn't wait for you to return. I couldn't remain another night in that... Mr. Holmes, I do apologize for this intrusion and, for my agitation.
Think nothing of that, Miss Presbury. Any fresh light you may throw on your father's case will be most welcome.
Shall I have Mrs. Hudson bring up some tea?
No, thank you, Dr. Watson. I'm quite recovered.
Do you feel able now to tell us what happened last night?
Go ahead, Edith. We may speak as freely to Dr. Watson as to Mr. Holmes.
Of course you may, of course you may. Do sit down, Miss Presbury. Yes, we'll hear your account of last night's new evidence a little later. First, I'd like to hear more of your impressions of the change in your father since his engagement to Miss Morphy.
Alice.
Miss Alice Morphy, to whom your father became engaged in...
In June.
Within days of that happy but unexpected...
Well, yes, it was rather...
Yes, within days of that happy but unexpected announcement, he disappears to Prague and returns an altered man. Tell us a little more about that.
I don't quite see what you want
to... I confess neither do I, Mr. Holmes. After what I have told you, and when Edith has experienced something, we
haven't
yet...
Your fiancé will, I'm sure, confirm, Miss Presbury, that complete frankness is essential if we're to unravel this case, and complete... trust in my method. Huh?
Jack? Very well. It was early in June. Very fine. Warm, as you'll no doubt remember. That day he was taking tea with the Morphys. Professor Morphy is his closest colleague. And I knew he and Alice were... they shared many interests. My interests... Anyway, I didn't go with him that day. I often did, but on that afternoon I'd been strangely restless, a slight headache. And the piano and my music is a great comfort to me.
Good afternoon, Edith.
Father, and Alice. How are you, Alice?
I'm well, Edith. We could hear you playing as we came across the garden. Very sweet.
Sweet and sad. When I'm in this headachey mood, I begin with such a piece, then move to something more light and jolly.
And that is restorative.
Restorative? Well, yes. It helps, sometimes.
How curious. But then you are artistic. All I can do in such a condition is lie down in a darkened room after taking one of my father's elixirs.
Is your father well?
Oh, yes. And perhaps imbibing elixirs of a different kind right now.
Imbibing?
In celebration, Edith. And perhaps you will play something more jolly now. Something downright joyful, I'd hope.
Something epithalamium. Is that the word?
It is, it is. Up, fair bride, and call thy stars from out their several boxes. Take thy, diamonds.
Rubies. Rubies, pearls, and diamonds.
Yes, and make thyself a constellation. A marriage song by John Donne.
Oh, I don't care for him. Mother used to read his sermons to me.
Oh, but in his youth, Alice, such lines he could spin. Love all alike no season knows, nor clime, nor hours, days, months, which are the rags of time.
But I summon Ben Johnson to my case, dear George, when it comes to Dunn.
George? You called my father?
Miss Morphy, your longtime friend Alice, and now my Alice too, has done me the stunning honour of agreeing to be my wife. Now, where's that young Jack of yours?
Jack?
He must share in the celebration, must my fine young Mr. Bennett. In the laboratory, is he?
I think so, yes.
Industrious fellow. Bennett's last task today shall be to bring up a bottle of our finest. And you, my pretty pale daughter, shall play. Hey!
You are pale, Edith. And I think in no mood for playing.
No. No, I don't think
this
I can.
Has come as an utter surprise to you.
Well, of course. There's been no hint that such a thing...
I know. We have been very discreet. We allowed no suggestion that matters were developing in this way until we were entirely sure of each other. Today was his third proposal, in fact.
Alice, Thomas Wellwood. You and he, I thought, were...
Young Mr. Wellwood is pleasant company, and I know he has high hopes. Indeed, high intention of making his career in the bank a sound one. But no more than sound. There are no Newtons or Galileos in the science of money. But your father's work now, and further attainments are ahead for him. You must know that. I'm not speaking of merely material success, Edith. Your father's work of itself is endlessly fascinating.
Alice?
Yes?
I think I must take your advice. This headache is one of the more removable ones. I'd best go and lie down for a while.
Of course. We'll talk more later.
Excuse me, Alice.
Edith?
I'm sorry, Alice. I do feel rather faint.
Oh, a moment only. You and I have been friends since childhood. I want us still to be friends.
Do you?
Well, of course. And more than that. Let me be frank. When your father and I are married, we will, of course, live here. But you mustn't think of me as your... Oh, but that's too absurd even to say. We should be like sisters, Edith. Sisters.
Edith?
Miss Presbury, are you feeling unwell?
What is it, Edith? Dr. Watson?
There's no need to continue if you don't feel up to it. You've told us enough for the moment.
I must tell you about last night.
Edith, if you're unwell, you mustn't force yourself to say
more. It was Roy that woke me, I think. Certainly he was barking from the stables when I was fully awake. And I know I was. I was awake. I remember thinking, is my door locked? But of course, who is this these days? The moonlight at the window was so bright. I could see quite clearly what was there.
What was there? At the window, you mean?
In a square of light. My father.
What?
My father's face, pressed against the window pane.
But your room is... it's on the second floor.
One of his hands was raised, as if he'd been about to push the window up. If that window had started to rise, I know I'd have gone mad. There have been times when I thought I am already, but it was no delusion. He was there for about 20 seconds or so, and I couldn't move. Even when he vanished, I still couldn't budge. Paralyzed. All I could do was lie and shiver until dawn. Then at breakfast, he didn't mention it.
And did you?
No. I made an excuse to come to town. Here I am.
Curious. Most curious.
Curious? It's uncanny.
But last night... So soon. That is curious.
Do you have something in mind, Holmes?
Yes. An inn in Cambridge. You, Mr. Bennett, shall return to your duties with as normal a manner as you can pretend while your fiancée remains in London. Your visit can be prolonged, Miss Presbury.
Yes, easily.
And you and I, Watson, if you can without too much inconvenience, uproot yourself from practice and domesticity. You and I shall, for the next few days, be in the most pleasant surroundings of that ancient and commendable hostel, the Chequers Inn. The linen is above reproach, the port above mediocrity. Thank you. There now. You agree about the port?
It's very fine.
And now that we're properly refreshed, we're fit to discuss the plane. What's your opinion?
Mine? You want my opinion?
Why shouldn't I?
These days, Holmes, I think I have become little more than a habit to you. Like a violin or your old black pipe. Sometimes you condescend to think aloud in my presence, but wouldn't it be as useful to address your pipe or that glass in your hand?
Indeed, no, Watson. My pipe doesn't register what I say, nor does it interject as you do.
Kind of you to say so.
Now, when Bennett found Presbury creeping along the corridor at night in that strange, stooped position, what do you make of that?
Well, as a medical man, I've known a severe attack of lumbago make a person walk in such a way.
Lumbago?
An affliction that can certainly be trying to the temper.
Oh, let's not be too flat-footed, Watson. Bennett told us that he was able to walk erect again.
I was joking, Holmes.
And the change in Presbury's character, his mysterious trip abroad. Have you something suitably facetious to say about those aspects of his case?
No. Speaking in all seriousness as a medical man, I believe it's a case for an alienist. A quite elderly gentleman falls in love, seriously so, with a much younger woman. His cerebral processes are disturbed by the affair. His journey to Prague may be a last and futile attempt to break himself of his passion.
Something in there. And the secret letters and packages in the locked box.
They may not even be directly connected. Some other private transaction, a loan perhaps, or share certificates.
Huh? And the Wolfhound disapproves of this financial dealing. Mm-hmm. No, there's more to it all than this. All connected.
And how do you propose we find out what more there is?
In the morning, we confront Presbury.
And cajole an explanation from him.
Unlikely, but I'd value a good close look at him. His daughter's told us that he seems to have little or no memory of those times when he's altered. I've thought of a bold and provoking approach to take advantage of that fact.
And are you familiar with Cambridge, Mr. Holmes?
I have been summoned here before.
That would suggest you are here, what's the phrase, on a case?
We are, yes, but we don't yet know quite how time-consuming it might be.
Then I must consume as little of your time as possible. What can I do for you, gentlemen?
What can you do for us?
I'm sorry?
That was the question I was about to put to you.
To me?
Yes. You see, I heard, through an agent of mine, that Professor Presbury of Cambridge had need of my services. There is only one Professor Presbury, I'm sure.
Indeed, there is only one.
And on the 26th of last month, you don't recollect communicating with my agent?
It is not a matter of recollection. At no time have I considered dealing with any detective.
Ah, then my agent must be in error. We can only apologize for troubling you, Professor.
Just a moment, gentlemen. Perhaps my agent can throw some light on the matter. It's not every day a man gets the opportunity to assist a detective of your stature. And your informant, Mr. Holmes, would I know his name?
I doubt it very much. And my business is, in this respect, like the good doctors here. There must be the strictest confidentiality between investigator and client.
Oh, I too put great value on confidentiality. Bennett?
Yes, sir.
These two gentlemen have come from London under the impression that they have been summoned. Do you know them?
Know them, sir?
Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson.
Well, of course, I know of them.
Please trouble yourself no more, Professor Presbury.
No trouble, Mr. Holmes. You handle all my correspondence, don't you, Bennett?
Yes, sir.
And have you a note of any kind, of any communication going to Mr. Holmes, or any letter, telegram, any scrap of paper at all to or from any third party concerning this, Mr. Holmes?
Nothing at all, sir.
And perhaps you'd show these misplaced and mistaken gentlemen out and return to me at once.
His nerves are in extreme disorder. You'd best return to him quickly, Mr. Bennett.
I fear you may be in for a rather uncomfortable time.
Still, I hate to tell the man lies.
Let him have his own way as far as you can. Try to cross him as little as possible.
Before you go, which is Miss Presbury's bedroom window?
Second floor, third from the right. And you'd better have this, Mr. Holmes.
What is it?
It's the address of the man in London with whom the professor is secretly communicating.
Well, now.
He wrote to him this morning, and I got it from his blotting paper. I must go, and please, please, clear all this up soon.
Well, the blotting paper, indeed. That young man has the makings of a detective, Watson. Dorak. Curious name, Holmes. Look at that window.
This press.
I have looked. There's a creeper below it and a water pipe above, which gives some foothold. Dorak. Slavonic, I assume.
Are you suggesting you could climb to that window?
Dorak, perhaps a Bohemia. Bohemia Prague? Yes, there's one connection, Watson. But the once faithful dog that so hates him, the Ivied Wall, no normal man could scale.
Glad you admit that.
A creeping gate.
We didn't learn much from our bold, close inspection, did we?
Well, apart from his poorly concealed rage at our intrusion, he gave little away, and his memory is more reliable than his daughter believes.
He struck me as being in possession of a perfectly clear and logical brain, and physically, there was nothing remarkable, portly. Smooth skin, his complexion and eyes quite
healthy. Smooth skin, apart from the knuckles, of course.
Knuckles?
Yes. Always look at the hands first, Watson, then cuffs, trouser knees, and boots. The professor's knuckles were thick and horny in a way that's quite new.
What is it?
The ivy, the knuckles, the dog, and Prague.
Prague?
And Alice.
Good God, no.
Surely not.
What?
Connections. Horrifying connections. Back to London, Watson. You to seek out this Dorak. I to visit Miss Edith Presbury.
But haven't I told you how I felt about the engagement, Mr. Holmes?
Yes, you have. And I would press you no further if I didn't think it necessary.
And why is it so necessary? Forgive me, but you ask me for a most unusual frankness about matters that are...
Delicate, yes.
Of a personal and family nature, certainly. So may I not ask for an equivalent openness from you?
Quite right. My investigations so far have led me to begin to make certain connections in my mind. Now, where these connections lead will decide how I must approach your father, how I might help him, help all your family. Put it this way. I am being so bold as to ask a lovely and decorous young lady to share with a virtual stranger those secrets young women friends might share.
Oh, Mr. Holmes.
Can you do that, Miss Presbury? Can you do that to save your father?
Save him.
And Alice. To save them both.
Bravo. You're playing Dove and Prue, Edith. And what a complex piece it was.
There's a deeper passion in it I can't quite reach.
What it might express, I can't say. But the sheer skill required. It's a science, too, in a way, isn't it?
Is it?
Mathematics. Each note in its place, like the components of an equation.
I met Thomas Wellwood yesterday.
Oh?
He was passionate.
He can be embarrassingly fervent, that young man.
He seemed torn between grief and anger. He suggested you and he had an understanding.
He misunderstood. And his passion will fade. The bank will soon cure him of such adolescent indulgence.
Oh, but he's such a sweet man, Alice.
Sweet? That kind of shallow winsomeness is not for me.
But my father is.
Most certainly.
You love my father?
I don't object to the word. But there are more precise ones. I respect him, even revere him. I'm honoured that such a brilliant and striving man should want me to be his wife. I know he'll protect me, raise my understanding of the world, and I don't shrink from confessing it, raise my position in the world. I mean the world of learning, of civilization.
Well, I feel all these things for Jack.
I hope so.
But we expect more.
Then you have high expectations.
Surely it's not overly ambitious to pray for children from our marriage.
I have no such ambition.
Your life together will be one entirely of the intellect. Of civilization.
And companionship, of course.
No other fulfilment? You're only a few years older than I.
And I will be your father's faithful wife. We are not French, Edith.
Alice.
That's as delicate as I can be to make sure you understand.
And does he understand? That companionship is the only...
I'm sure he must. Your father, after all, has already lived the kind of fulfilment you're talking about. You are its result, and he is justly proud of you.
I remember his face when he announced your engagement. He looked fervent. His eyes were young.
Please, Can we let this subject rest?
Have I given away enough secrets now?
Yes, I think you have.
And your connections?
They become more clear.
In what direction do they lead?
They lead me to Cambridge. You, they compel to stay here. Out of danger.
Dear God, Holmes. I cannot believe this is happening.
But there it is, Watson.
It's like a nightmare.
But I see it too. We are both awake.
Do we interfere?
Not yet. You have your revolver.
Yes. Do you think...
I think when something as monstrous as this is unleashed, we must be ready for anything.
Look. He's down. Heading around the side of the house.
Towards the stables. Good.
But the wolfhound is there.
And so should our third man be there.
The speed of him. He moves like...
Yes, Watson. I know what he moves like. Come on now. After him.
Come on, you toothless one. Can't reach me, can't touch me. Of course you can't. You're the runner,
I'm the master.
You're in chains and I'm in charge, the master. It's all mine. See, me, can't reach. Having the strength, having the blood, having the brains, and me all brains and brawn all. Might and pain.
Professor Presbury.
Oh, man.
Leave the beast alone.
A man all blood and bone and rubber.
Right, put down. Stay back, he knows me. Down, Royce, put down.
You'll sleep for some time now. The morphia should see to that.
Thank you, Doctor.
And thanks for your help, Mr. Bennett. But he should be seen by a first-class surgeon.
No.
We had him firmly by the throat.
And you've dressed the wound well. I do have a medical degree.
Then you know the teeth pass dangerously close to the carotid artery.
But he'll survive.
Yes, I think the danger is past.
Then no more outsiders, please. If his condition gets beyond these walls...
But what is his condition? I still can't quite believe what I saw out there. On the wall.
On the wall?
He was climbing, Mr. Bennett, climbing on the ivy with the most extraordinary speed and agility, leaping from branch to branch like a... Isn't that so, Holmes? It was like a dream. On that moonlit wall in his dressing gown, he looked like a huge bat, and he seemed to climb for the sheer joy of it. His agility was... I can't fathom it.
For pleasure? He climbs an ivied wall for pleasure?
That's how it looked. And the other night, when he appeared at the young lady's window, he must have been, well, indulging in this mad pastime.
When mere chance brought him to Edith's window?
Yes. We must assume so. Is that your opinion, Holmes? Holmes?
What?
Mere chance brought him to his daughter's window.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
Holmes, what is this? How could he do those things? Is it madness?
Madness. Oh, yes, it's that.
Your interest in the dates, 9 days, you said. Are you thinking of some connection between bouts of insanity and phases of the moon?
Oh, no, no. A drug. A drug administered at regular 9-day intervals. The incident out of sequence, his appearance at the window on the 4th of September. Well, either he'd increased the dose or the effects were growing out of his control. I'm inclined to the latter theory.
But what drug could bring about such a horrible transformation?
Perhaps we'll find the answer in that precious locked box of his. You said the key's on his watch chain.
Yes.
Yes, and the box in the laboratory.
It was, yes.
And bring the key and show us the way. As I warned you, we may have to violate his deepest privacy.
Yes, it fits. Not much here.
But enough. You were right, Holmes. A hypodermic syringe.
One empty vial, one nearly full. And the letters, you see, with the cross under the stamp.
From our Bohemian friend in London, Dorak. Well, I've already settled him. The police should be interviewing him now.
He's no more than an errand boy. I'm sure you'll find a more significant name in that other letter.
This one? It's from Prague. Should I read it, Mr. Holmes?
If you can face all the truth.
Well, of course I... Why should I not?
I shall read it. From someone named H. Lowenstein.
Lowenstein? I know that name. Oh, my God.
He says... No.
Let me see. Honored colleague, the treatment... Enjoin caution. Not without danger. The serum of anthropoid would have been better. Have used black-faced langur. A specimen was accessible.
Langur?
An ape from the Himalayas, is it not? Yes. The most human of climbing monkeys.
He was injecting himself with ape serum?
Lowenstein is already known and condemned by his profession for his ruthless search for the secret of rejuvenescence, for the elixir of life.
His strength, his agility.
New youth, new virility. And, of course, the dog must have sensed the change in him before anyone else. His smell.
Alice. Dear God, Alice.
Holmes, even Lowenstein won't resist you. We'll write to him, yes? Even go there. Go to Prague. Confront him with his criminal responsibility for this obscenity.
Yes, yes, we can stop Lowenstein, but others will follow. Others may find a better way. The sensual, the material, the worldly. They'll prolong their worthless lives. There's more of the spirit will resist the temptation. So who will survive? What sort of cesspool might our world become?
So, you think you understand, Mr. Philosopher Holmes?
Professor, how can you... Professor, you should not be moving.
Please, still, Doctor. My elixir is more powerful than any common sawbones can know. More potent than your morphia.
You must go back to bed.
And you, Holmes, you lecture me about when my work should be done, when my life should be over.
I do not lecture. I merely observe with horror.
Horror? The meddling detective, the grubby snoop, is horrified? How could you understand my horror? That I should wither before my work. My life is fulfilled. How can you understand my need? Professor, let me, dear God.
Strange to hear that name from one who'd flout nature's laws.
What? I'm not down here to pray, Holmes. My legs gave way. They just gave way.
Look at yourself. Listen to yourself. Is this the man of renewed youth who awaited the altar for Miss Alice Morphy? And don't you think a wife, even one as innocent as she, will sense that you stand there with blood in your veins? That's an affront to nature. Blood that flows from a monstrous experiment that's already brought you like an animal to your daughter's window in the middle of the night, that's aroused disgust and fear in your family, your friends, even your own dog. Watson.
Yes, Holmes.
There's an early train to town. But I think we have time to return to the Checkers first for a refreshing cup of tea.
What's to become of me?
Ah, you have a loyal servant in Mr. Bennett here, and I think still a devoted friend.
Of course.
God bless you, Bennett.
He and your daughter will see you through what will no doubt be a long and painful convalescence, and perhaps, you'll have a wife to guide you with proper discipline to a full recovery. Now, Watson, the Checkers and that tea.
In The Creeping Man, Sherlock Holmes was played by Clive Medicine and Dr. Watson by Michael Williams, with Robin Ellis as Professor Presbury. Edith Presbury was played by Deborah Berlin, Alice Murphy by Annabel Mullion, and Jack Bennett by Oliver Senton. The violinist was Leonard Friedman. The Creeping Man was dramatized for radio by Robert Forrest and directed by Patrick Rayner.